There's a line that is prominent in academia, and it should be prominent in pretty much everywhere, that a little bit of knowledge is a very dangerous thing when the person believes they know more than they actually do. This is why conspiracy theories and all these other things are becoming the rage these days, because in the feeling of powerlessness that we don't understand how the world is functioning and how everything is kind of working against, or at least how we feel it's working against us, then we're quite happy to make up a conspiracy theory that to pretty much everybody else sounds insane, but to us makes perfect sense, because of course it helps us prevent from thinking of, wait a second, in what way am I culpable? Usually it winds up becoming, well, the Illuminati did it, or the Masons did it, or the Catholic Church did it. And we need to kind of get over this. And so here is an interesting example that came before us early this morning, well, this particular morning, and I warned them I would rip on them about this. Our two readers came to church this morning, both wearing black pants and a bright yellow upper garment. And they only noticed in the back of the church. So they're looking at each other and they're like, oh. You know that, like when you arrive at a party, you're like, well, one of us has got to go home and change. But that didn't happen because Mass was about to start, and Father likes to start on time as much as possible. So I was just go, and then I said, just as the procession is about to start, be prepared to be ripped on in the homily. Well, this is the ripping. And of course, some of you who are more fashionably noticeable or whatever, you might have picked up on it. And then, of course, you'd be like, well, what's the reason? Is this a special thing on Sundays? Or is this a new garment that Father's making them wear? Is this some brand new practice? I don't know. And then, of course, conspiracy theories would start to come up. And then, of course, the simplest explanation, it happened. Now, there's another rule that comes into the general life of a Christian that also I just broke, which is try not to embarrass people. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. But the reason why you don't want to do it is because if you don't know what it's like to be embarrassed, you just don't do it to other people. We call this Sunday Divine Mercy Sunday because in the process of mercy, the whole thing begins with you understanding the world not from your own perspective, but from someone else's. To realize that sometimes the world is more complicated than our easy explanations about how things are working out. So these two readers were not planning your end and your demise and a change to the parish. It was just a weird coincidence. And when we have the heart of mercy, we begin to step out of our limitations and we start to have doubt about our own mind and doubt from our own perspective. And it allows us to be able to say, how do you feel about this? There is no such thing as a Christian that has no empathy. You must have the organ of empathy to understand the gospel. And of course, for a priest, this can be really interesting because I'm so regularly screwing up on a regular basis that I can think very little about being publicly humiliated. Here's a good example. Walking up to the front of the church, I'm like, oh, I forgot my microphone. Angelina, can you go and run off and get the microphone for me? And so I'm like, okay, can I get this off by the time? No. Okay, got it. Okay, Mass continues and life goes on as usual. But to really realize that you don't want to put people through these experiences is an important part of human maturity. So I went through four things this week that, let's just say, taught me about what it's like for a person to come back to church, to come back to God, to come back to the sacraments. Because sometimes if we go to church all the time, every Sunday, every day, whatever, or even once a month, come more, but once a month is better than nothing. We sometimes forget that if you haven't been in a church for a very, very long time, it's nerve-wracking, terrifying for people. And so these four experiences kind of helped me gel them all together. The first one was on Monday morning. And in the bit of a background, over the Easter weekend, I kept getting calls from a next-door neighbor's security company asking if I wanted to do a security check on their building. And I said, you're calling me on Holy Thursday at 6 p.m. and I'm a Catholic priest. I have a mass in an hour. This is the last thing I'm going to do. Click. Sunday evening. Would you like to go over and test the security system? Okay, I've been celebrating masses all weekend. No. Click. Well, God's funny. Because the next morning, a panic alarm went off, and the Saanich police decided to come inside my house, guns out. Because there was a broken window on the front of my house, and I left the door unlocked because I just fell asleep rather than going to bed like a sane person. I just dropped. So they see a broken window, a front door unlocked, and a panic alarm. They're thinking, this is the house, this is the problem, we're going in, Saanich police. And I'm in bed and I'm thinking, ugh, fine. Because I ain't ready for this kind of evaluation. And of course, I come out of bed and they're looking at me, so you're the priest? I'm like, yes! Maybe they were expecting somebody with an extra 20 years of life experience on their face. So they're like, you're the priest? I'm like, yes! Take them down into the church. They finally see my picture in the hallway. They're like, okay, fine. You know, like... The second one was, I went to the dentist. And I'm sitting in the chair and I bring my theology book and I'm reading and I'm, you know, because you have to keep researching to be able to understand the mystery of the faith. You can't just stay at an 8-year-old level and think you're mature. So I had to keep reading the faith, but then I realized I'm too tired to be able to think properly. And of course, you don't want to read that 20-year-old copy of Chatelaine. So I picked up something else. Or Cosmo. I picked up something else and it had a lovely little line in it and it's called Dental Phobia. Millions of Canadians are afraid of the dentist. For some, the fear is so intense that they never seek professional care. Many more stay away until painful dental disease forces them to get help. Many people become fearful in the days before high-speed drilling and accurate anesthesia. Others developed anxiety as children, either from a bad experience or because family or friends led them to expect pain at the dentist's. Dentists are aware and understand these problems. Some dentists specialize in treating anxious patients. And then I laughed hysterically, showed it to my dentist, and I said, this is a perfect job description of a priest. When people are afraid of going to confession, this is exactly what's going on inside their mind. Because I went in for a crown from a root canal, and that, I was thinking, is probably more enjoyable for some people than going to confession for the first time after 40 years. So I was like, okay, use this, man. Think about this. Because you remembered how much your root canal was absolutely horrible. So be kind to people when they show up at your confessional door. The next phase was a number of months ago at the 8:30 Mass, we had to call the cops for a particular reason, which will go unmentioned. But anyway, I had to go on trial for this whole thing and give my witness testimony. So the prosecution's like, okay, Reverend, da-da-da, you have to do all these things and you have to answer these questions, make sure you're all clear because, you know, they'll challenge you and all these other things. And it was just the most frustrating thing to be able to go and to be ripped away from your life and to be examined on something about your own safety and the safety of your people. And I was like, ugh, how boring is this? How frustrating is this? How tough it is to have nobody take you at your word and to feel alienated and frustrated. Oh, the week of mercy continues. The last one is, if you haven't been to church in a very, very long time, usually the two ways in which you get dragged in front of the priest is because your friend gets married or your family member or friend dies. Well, a member of my old congregation, when I was in the Protestant Church of, you know, United Church of Canada downtown, a member of my parents' old congregation passed away. So I decided to go back to the church of my youth and to pray with them to, well, they don't quite pray for the repose of the soul like Catholics do. It's a slightly different practice. And I go there for this funeral service, and there are all the people who remembered me when I was 11 years old. The black sheep quite literally returned. And the black sheep is now the black shepherd. And they're like, oh, it's Father Hoffman. It's so good to see you. And they're like, I remember when you were just like a little kid. You looked just like your mom and dad. You know, like that thing that you just never want to endure. Well, that happened a lot. And of course, I had to use the standard trademark humor to diffuse the whole situation. But I realized that all four of those scenarios is what it's like for a person to come back to God. And it ain't easy. Which is why God teaches the disciples, Jesus teaches his disciples, the fundamental lesson of mercy throughout his mission, but most especially in these resurrection encounters. Poor Thomas gets the title of Doubting Thomas. He didn't believe the proclamation. But all the disciples didn't believe the resurrection account when Mary Magdalene and the women came to them and said, he is risen. And then in Luke's gospel, they specifically state that they thought it was an old wives' tale. They thought it was just the ramblings of some crazy people who are trying to get us to believe again. And then Jesus comes back and says, guys, come on. When ladies tell you to do something, do it. Life lesson. So he upbraids them for their lack of faith and challenges them to really rediscover what it means to believe. Because if we go out in mission, we must go out in mission. But we must understand how difficult it is for people to undergo this most profound of mysteries, which is the resurrection itself. This is not a cheap religion where you can just kind of come here on Sunday, feel good about yourself for about an hour, relatively speaking, endure a long, tedious reflection, and then go out and then your life continues the same. This is a reorientation, a transformation of everything we are and would like to be. And it starts with God revealing his innermost attribute. Not power, it's not knowledge, it's mercy. And God created us to be a reflection of that mercy. And it comes through the experience of not knowing, through the encounter of seeing a possible conspiracy theory and thinking, they are trying to ruin the parish, they're changing the clothes, do I have to buy yellow now if I'm reading? No! Giving people the benefit of the doubt and realizing that if I want to be treated with deference and concern, I must do that with other people. As the Father has forgiven us, so we must forgive each other. And as the Father has sent Christ, now he sends us to be mercy, to be compassionate, to truly understand what people go through, but not to be the indulgent person that says, as long as it doesn't interfere with my life, you can go ahead and do whatever you like. That we know we are one body, and that we share in the flesh of the risen Lord. And what does he do? He invites us into his pain. He invites us into his wounds. He allows and he answers our doubts. God does not take our doubts away by giving us the fake gift of certainty. God gives us the gift of our doubt so that a greater faith can transform it. If your pain or your sins feel to be too much for God to handle, I will make you a promise. He can. But if you can't take my word for it, well, even the apostles themselves know that sometimes it's hard to believe the witness of somebody. They need to see it. They need to see this mercy operative in your life. They need to know that this power has forgiven you. And Jesus does something on this day that really is earth-shattering. He gives the authority to forgive sins to ridiculously weak and fragile men. Confession was not something the church just made up in the Middle Ages to try to make themselves feel important. This is something we all need. We need to hear that God has forgiven us. We don't just need to feel it, it needs to become true. And I'll tell you this, a priest is not a good confessor because he's smart. They're generally just as foolish as the rest of us. Personal experience here. And if you're afraid of terrifying judgment, well, sometimes priests are judgmental, I will admit that. And it's usually because they're just as insecure as the rest of us. But they also know that they are sinners too. And they have no right whatsoever to have the privilege of being able to reconcile you to God. It's not my right. It's my joy. Somebody asked me a little while ago what my favorite thing about being a priest. And I smiled coyly and didn't say anything for a little while. And I said, my favorite things about being a priest are the things I can't talk about.